New technology, old structures. With their ability to delink reproduction from sex, PAR creates new forms of parenthood and family that were not possible before. As such, single people and queer individuals and couples can now use art to have biologically related children. It can be argued that art privileges procreative intent over the narrow idea of biology. Indeed, they are interpreting and defining biology. This is how conflicting claims of multiple parents made possible by these technologies can be and are settled, most notably, through the law. This section is an exploration of the following issues. What is the potential in art for the subversion of the heterosexual family? Does art serve to pluralize, even democratize, the family and kinship, or do they merely circumscribe it, reinforcing and re-legitimizing traditional formats? Or is it a bit of both? The potential of art in subverting the heteronormative structure of the family by queer couples has been variously contested. By opening up the institution of family to homosexual partners, are we enhancing the scope and meaning of sexual and reproductive rights, and challenging traditional gender roles? Or is it simply a need for recognition that dilutes such a challenge precisely for the desire to be in such institutions and reinforce their natural and normal status? Cheshire Calhoun argues for an inclusive definitional framework for what is understood and legitimized as family and expanding it beyond heterosexual privilege. The inclusion of queer people in legal structures from where they have been historically outlawed for their deviant nature has become a possibility through art. Moreover, creating families in alternative ways also includes the potential to provide alternatives to the conventional family form. And thus, centered within a liberatory lesbian and gay politics, the bid for access to the family is the bid for the right to exercise definitional authority with respect to the family. Note reference, 23. Page 11. However, body economies, including the surrogacy industry, despite their subversive potential to reconfigure social structures of patriarchy, gender, caste, class, and race, often get attuned to those traditional structures. Surrogacy through art lies on the same spectrum as other phenomena that involve the intimate use of the body and its parts. In the context of one such phenomenon, organ donation, Lawrence Cohen highlights how caste and community have come to matter and how families choose organ donors and sellers in ways they hitherto had not. Note reference, 24. Similarly, some people may seek surrogates or donor gametes from a particular religious background, just as they may want male or able-bodied embryos to be selected for implantation. FAMA's 2010 research, as discussed earlier in the paper, confirms this. Similarly, the surrogacy industry serves to re-inscribe descriptive identities in sometimes predictable and sometimes unpredictable ways. From FAMA's research, as well as other studies that document accounts of surrogates' subjectivities, it is clear how notions of long and sacrifice play a very important role in decision-making. Surrogates often say they are acting out of love for their own children and to be able to give them a better future through entering into surrogacy arrangement. In fact, the distinction between altruistic and commercial surrogacy does not stand up to scrutiny, because commercial surrogates feel altruistically about what they do as well, and altruistic surrogacies could involve transactions, material and otherwise. Especially when we consider that altruistic surrogacies occur within family and kinship networks, which are transactional in nature. Further, the industry employs new and old patriarchal notions of womanhood, motherhood, gender, bodies, and labor. Since art clinics employ a conscious marketing strategy that glorifies motherhood for women, feminists have criticized the industry for being patriarchal and capitalist, and for cashing in on the pressure on women to be mothers. Socially, the value accorded to biological parenthood within heterosexual marriage is far superior to the value accorded to voluntary childlessness, adoption, or alternative family/kinship structures. At least thus far in India, the practice of assisted reproduction is overwhelmingly geared towards reinforcing the heteropatriarchal family, by restoring the linear progression from heterosexual marriage to biological parenthood. Amrita Panda argues that the surrogate is socialized to be a mother worker in a way that her status as a mother is an insidious disciplining mechanism that undermines her status as a worker. Note reference, 25. Saravina argues that the most important criteria for choosing surrogates is their submissiveness to the demands of doctors and intended parents, clinics prefer women who are on the edge of poverty and not educated beyond the higher secondary level. Note reference 26. Additionally, the figure of the sex worker comes up a lot in interviews with agents, doctors, and surrogates. The sex worker is the other, the real body seller, who serves to bolster the altruistic veneer of surrogacy for all involved. Cohen discusses the state and the question of political form in the conversation on bioavailability from two standpoints: operability, the degree to which one's belonging to and legitimate demands of the state are mediated through invasive medical commitment and the medicalization of politics. Note reference 27. Operability is a useful frame to employ in surrogacy. Given that women who act as surrogates are predominantly from marginalized sections of society. Note reference 28. There is a need to broaden the debate beyond rights for surrogates in the arrangement, though that is also urgent and needs intervention to include larger issues of reproductive justice, autonomy, and oppression. Surrogates have very little autonomy over their own pregnancies. They are from a class that has traditionally been targeted for population control, coercive, or incentivized to bevanese, have high maternal mortality and morbidity, and little access to health care that should be their entitlement. A longer-term, life-cycle view of the reproductive health of these women and its linkages with interrelated questions of livelihoods, nutrition, education, amongst others, helps to understand surrogacy not only in individual terms but also in the context of communal rights, state responsibility, political economy, and the conditions of women's labor under globalization. Additionally, only women with proven fertility are eligible to be surrogates can be seen as a prior. Page 12. Operability that has marked its presence in their bodies through their identification as mothers. Often, women who start off doing egg donation later become surrogates, and maybe even surrogacy agents themselves. Clearly, this is a class that already is a medicalized and highly gendered relationship with the state, and is characterized in public discourse as having excessive passion and limited reason. Surrogacy also flags important questions about reproductive autonomy and justice. If women's right to make reproductive choices with regard to contraception, abortion, and pregnancy is recognized, should we not also understand surrogacy as another choice for women to make? The idea of choice, however, is questioned by some feminists. Note reference 30. Given that women's control over their bodies is determined by social relations and power hierarchies, this is evident in the context of surrogacy arrangements, where denial of reproductive rights and autonomy are governed by private contracts. For instance, denial of surrogates' rights to abort, breastfeed, relinquish the child or children, among others. The reproductive justice approach to surrogacy would therefore be one that looks to create structural changes, challenges the inherent power inequalities, and also accounts for reproductive oppression. However, the reproductive justice approach is not without its limitations. Alshon Bailey recognizes that a surrogate's life circumstances, housing needs, debt, illness, and disease may make the health risks associated with contract pregnancy worth taking. Note reference 32. The decision to become surrogates is frequently founded in women's social conditioning to gendered roles of ensuring families' well-being. Note reference 33. Evidence also points to the industry's control and construction of information that women need to make an informed decision with regard to surrogacy. Note reference 34. Women are not provided clear and comprehensive information about the procedures that they will be undergoing and the implications and risks to their health and lives. For example, surrogate mothers would not be informed and would not know when they would undergo procedures for fetal reduction or would not have a choice about giving birth through cesarean procedure. Note reference 35. While commissioning parents have the right to demand abortion if they wish to discontinue the arrangements, or in view of the detection of congenital abnormalities, the surrogate does not have the right to keep the child if she so wishes. Surrogate women thus have little or no say in decisions, including decisions about their own bodies. Concerns surrounding surrogacy do not result only from a view of motherhood as sacrosanct and pure. Rather, a feminist engagement with surrogacy, as feminist Chaminaka Shah puts it, is conflicted about the disconcerting use of a language of rights and choice by the promoters of these businesses on behalf of women going in for these technologies on the one hand, and the assertion of rights over The body as resource, on the other hand. Note reference, 36.